The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Bud Elliott. That's Tom Fornelli. That's Danny Cannell. I'm Chip Patterson. Time to get into the big old bag of mail here to send you off into your weekend on a high note. And if you're all the way up there, if you're at the top of the mountain, if you're living that mountain life, you know that this week Paramount Plus went live. That's right, live sports, breaking news, a mountain of entertainment. Paramount Plus can go straight from game day to movie night. You can stream iconic movies like The Godfather, Indiana Jones, Mission Impossible, and new episodes of critically acclaimed original series like Star Trek Picard, The Good Fight, and The Stand. And get this, it's where you're going to be able to dive into live sports from CBS Sports. That's the NFL, March Madness right around the corner, the Masters, and Champions League Soccer. Always ongoing, plus stream hit shows from CBS, Nickelodeon, MTV, BET, Smithsonian Channel, and Comedy Central. Live sports, breaking news, a mountain of entertainment. Paramount Plus streaming now. Go and download it. You got multiple tiers that you can sign up for. It is going to be where you can get many, many, many of the fine options on CBS Sports and others from the Viacom CBS family. So, gentlemen, I hope we are doing well. How's everybody feeling here as we wrap up the week?
I'm great. I'm watching Paramount Plus.
Good. Fired up. Big weekend here at the Cannell household. 16 years of marriage celebrated Friday, woo, March 5th. So we made it this far, baby. No turning back now.
Yeah, she's stuck now, man.
Exactly. 16. She's vested.
So what was the timetable? Do you remember like what you were doing in like the February? Because March 5th sounds like it was a strategically placed date. Yeah. So do
off-season, NFL off-season.
Right.
So I actually had a pretty good bachelor party run. Like there were a couple things. There was, I believe that was the Super Bowl was in Jacksonville that year. Believe. And I went up to the Super Bowl, and Super Bowl always has good parties. There was a Playboy party that was there that was always at the time was the legendary party. So had a good time there. And then probably the kicker was it. So our off-season workout started the first week of April. So the best part about getting married was our honeymoon. So we honeymooned for a month because you can do those types of things when you're an NFL athlete, right? Like you can't do those if you're just some working Joe. You just see ya. So we actually went around the world on our honeymoon. And that was the way I approached it, was like, hey, I'm never going to be able to take a month off ever again. And maybe shouldn't have then either because I was cut 6 months later. Mike Shanahan probably didn't love the trip around the world. But it was pretty cool. So that was definitely the highlight and why it was strategically placed in March. Plus, March in Florida, I could show you guys outside. It's 78 and sunny right now. And, you know, we had all my buddies in from around the country. We had a blast, man. It was a ton of fun.
That's awesome. Yeah, that was the Super Bowl in Jacksonville, Eagles and Patriots.
Patriots, yep.
Paul McCartney is the halftime show. That's a it was a really solid Super Bowl right there. There you go.
Yeah, I'm in Manab throwing up. Yeah.
Yeah. That is 100% right. All right. Let's go ahead and dive on into this big old bag of mail. And we're gonna begin with a fun one. This is I love when the listeners become part of the universe here. And this one is from, he says, B Rabbit is his name. Let me begin by heaping praise on the addition of Bud. Reminiscent of when the Pistons traded for Rasheed Wallace in the 2003-2004 season, already a very good team, but needed to secure the last piece of their championship puzzle. I thoroughly enjoyed the CFC, the Coach's Fighting Challenge, a couple episodes ago. Go back and listen to it. Picking conference winners by coach fights. I believe it might even be in the headline. If not, it's in the description. It was a couple mailbags ago, so go ahead and go check it out. A couple episodes ago, with that in mind, I have a two-pronged question for y'all in either or, if you will. Any questions, you can call me at 281-330-8004. I said. So he got our Mike Jones number for us. Who would you assemble for your starting five in basketball with a sixth man off the bench out of current college coaches, and what positions would you select them for? Your selections can come from any FBS team, and other than head coaches, may include OCs, DCs, and strength special teams coaches. After you pick your lineup, who would you select as the head coach of your basket coach team? And I've got his answers too. And he also has another part of this, which I think was just going to be better to read, which is him picking a coach for all the different kinds of drinking games. And I found that drinking games sometimes can be like regional. You know, not everyone plays the same games by the same rules. So I wanted to at least stick this to a more fluent language, which would be the game of basketball. I have my starting five. Who would like
did
to go
first?
Did you
guys do assistant coaches too?
No, I just did head coaches.
I just did head coaches.
Okay, good. Because I didn't either. But I'm a little bit bummed because my first choice for my basketball player of football coaches team would have been Nick Hill of Southern Illinois, who just knocked off North Dakota State. He was a two-sport athlete at Southern Illinois, played quarterback and basketball, and he's only 35 years old, like he's younger. That was going to be my ringer, dang it, but he's off the board apparently, so it's only FBS. So, all right.
I mean, I'll give it to you.
No.
Tom's holding me to the letter of the law. Okay. All right. Who wants to go first? I will.
I'll go.
All right. Go ahead.
No, you go.
Okay. So, first of all, my head coach is going to be somebody with NBA experience. Okay. NBA is what in Tuscaloosa they call the Noontime Basketball Association. We've heard about it all throughout the Nick Saban tenure. It's kind of part of his coaching staff, team building, camaraderie. But because of some minor work that's been done along the way, he ain't got it quite like he used to. He did tell Devonta Smith, the Heisman Trophy winner, that he's got some kind of mechanically loaded spring in his hip that he's really excited about. That probably gives him an extra burst. But I think he was kidding when he said that. So Nick Saban's going to be my head coach. So then I start to build out the group, and it's got to start with not only one of the youngest coaches, but just one of the tallest. I mean, we're playing basketball here. 6'7", Sean Lewis, the head coach of Kent State, is going to end up probably being on the taller end. Also down low, I'm going to put Nebraska's Scott Frost. I just feel like he's got a good body for it. He can probably play above the rim. Then it's a little bit more of a three-guard lineup, but we'll start with my two wing players. On one end, we've got somebody who is all-state in both football and basketball in the state of Kentucky in high school. We're talking about West Virginia's Neil Brown. I think that guy can get out there and hoop. And then on the other end, out of the Pride of Wake Forest, I don't know this for sure, but I would bet that just like as Danny has said, and we've heard from football players all over the place, every football player plays in basketball intramurals and lights the frat boys up. I bet Josh Gattis had the work for some Wake Forest frat boys in the Wake Forest intramural league. So Michigan offensive coordinator Josh Gattis is going to be my other wing. My point guard is a little bit undersized, big time chip on the shoulder guy. But, you know, he's got to be the coach on the floor. Nick Saban's a little undersized. So Boston College's Jeff Hafley, who keeps a list of all the haters in his wallet, I think that he's kind of scrappy. He can be someone that everyone can get around on. And then my sixth man is somebody also with NBA experience, but always on the outside looking in, forever, just one spot away from the big dance. Kirby Smart, congratulations, you're on the bench and you're not in the starting five. So Nick Saban is coach, Halfley, Gattis, Neil Brown, Scott Frost, Sean Lewis, and Kirby Smart as my sixth man. That is my basket coach lineup.
We've got a lot of crossover on ours. I also have Nick Saban as my coach because I feel like a basketball coach more than anything. I need somebody who's going to know how to get on the officials, and I trust that Nick's going to get on the officials for me. So I made him my coach. I also have Sean Lewis because he's 6'7", and he's only 34, so you know he's still in shape. And that is something that, to me, when I was going through these coaches trying to figure out who I wanted, I was skewing towards the younger because basketball, not an old man's game. You got to be somewhat young to play it and play it well. My sixth man was Jeff Halfley. He's on there. I also have Neil Brown because, like you said, two sports star. My other coaches that I have are Lincoln Riley, who I'm not exactly sure how tall he is, but he's young. And I think he's about 6'2", 6'3", because when you see him standing next to, like, Jalen Hurts. Yeah, you see him standing next to his quarterbacks. He's about an inch or two taller than them. So I think he's got some good size. I've got my point guard, scrappy guy who never runs out of energy, guy who's going to be slapping the floor, pissing off the other team, drawing charges, PJ Fleck.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, for sure. And then
finally, the last player, my last guy in my starting lineup, I got some inside scoop on this guy. He was a good basketball player in high school. He was scrappy. He's more of an undersized four. He'll also take charges. He'll dive for loose balls. He can hit the mid-range jumpers. I'm taking Vanderbilt's Clark Lee.
I like that a lot. All right, who wants to go next?
Danny, go ahead.
All right. My point guard. I'm going speed, my lineup. All right. I got Willie Taggart. A lot of Willie Taggart, head coach at FAU. A lot of my guys are former quarterbacks because most quarterbacks, dual sport athletes, even three sport athletes in high school. So I'm going to go with an athletic lineup here. A lot of quarterbacks in mine. My shooting guard will be David Shaw. I'm going a little bit, you know, younger guy. He's competitive. He's in good shape. Like, he's got the physique. I think my team can run. At my three, I'm going to go with Ron Dugans, my wide receiver coach at Florida State, my old teammate, who also would have some continuity with Willie Taggart, having coached on the staff there. So they got some good feel for each other. Then at the four, I think you guys are missing out on somebody in the SEC, and it's not a part of the NBA. It's Brian Harsin. Younger guy, competitive. Like, I think he's the silent assassin. Yeah, he can be your kind of rough guy out there, can be an enforcer. But I have two. So I got speed at the 1, 2, and 3, so I can run circles. And I got some enforcers at the 4 and 5 spots. For my big, I'm going big with Mario Cristobal. Again, another former offensive lineman. He's tall. I might be a little bit older at some of these spots, but I can use, we're gonna clear the rim. We're gonna have a rim protector. We got it all settled. And then my sixth man is Jim Harbaugh, who is gonna be irritated that he didn't start. So he's gonna come in with a chip on his shoulder, and he's just gonna be a wild man who probably gets into foul trouble anyway. So then we get him out and we kind of rotate him in there. My coach is probably the hardest thing I had to go with. Like, I'm trying to decide who do I think would be the best coach. I'll go with Les Miles of Kansas, the quirky personality, but he's hyper competitive. If you remember the basketball videos when he was at LSU with his kids, he obviously likes basketball. I think he'd be perfect for all these big personalities to keep them loose. So I got Les Miles as my head coach.
I mean, he is at Kansas, so you got to figure he knows how to coach basketball.
Very good call. So
good call.
That was him swatting his kids, right? That was the old commercial. Yes. He was just rejecting his children's shot. And then my other thought is 100%. What is Jim Harbaugh on a basketball team? Five hard fouls, baby. Hard fouls. Defend the rim. Make them earn that at the line. Love it. All right, bud.
I mean, like, you want Harbaugh on your YMCA team, right?
Yes.
Like, for sure.
Yeah.
You don't want to play against him. That's for sure, too.
No, he's got to be annoying as hell. So you guys took
shirtless on the sideline with a sweatband chugging milk.
Oh, man. You guys had a lot of mine. Neil Brown, I think, was a really obvious one. Willie Taggart was a damn good high school quarterback, especially running around. And I believe he had to wait his turn for Tommy Frazier, right? So, like, you know, fairly decent team he was on there. Sean Lewis is the guy I picked to win the whole fight tournament. So at 6'7", still in good shape. And in the Sean Lewis fan, I was trying to think about guys who were tight ends, right? I don't know what position Campbell played at Iowa State, but he's not tiny, you know. But yeah. But one guy who Twitter gave me a lot of flack for not mentioning in the coaches fight tournament is a dude who was an all-state wrestler, was a, you know, scholarship guy at Ohio State, defensive end, Luke Fickell. So I'm going to go ahead and win down low with Sean Lewis and Luke Fickell. We'll run around the perimeter with Neil Brown, Willie Taggart, and I actually couldn't figure out who to be my three. But I'll go ahead and take Campbell for that.
Campbell, Mount Union, big mid-major energy right there. Cinderella story. Okay, so B Rabbit said point guard Lincoln Riley seems like a natural fit at point guard, assumed passing and scoring creativity. Shooting guard Marcus Freeman, Cincinnati's defensive coordinator, was in the NFL as late as 2009. At his age, still has a lot of athletic superiority over opponents. Small forward Lane Kiffin, need his on-court trash talking. Power forward, great one, Antonio Pierce. Former longtime NFL linebacker, believe he could easily body up with any opposing coach. At center, Brian Van Gorder. Can picture him being an absolute terror fighting for rebounds. His sixth man, Jim Leonard, assume he would be a lockdown defender and bring some juice off the bench. Went with him over Venables due to Jim Leonard being 38 and Brent Venables being 50. Head coach, Herm Edwards. You play to win the game. Okay, then he said, who would you select for a beer fest style drinking team? His suggestions were for beer pong, he would have Brian Brohm. Tons of success as a QB at Louisville, would need him to use those same abilities to clear 10 cups. For the shotgun race, Brett Bielema, a guy just seems like he can chug a beer. For quarters, Tommy Reese. Somewhat successful college quarterback, you need dexterity and accuracy for quarters. Thumper, I haven't seen Beer Fest in a long time. I might need y'all to remind me what Thumper is, but he got Kendall Briles, would make up the most complex hand motions, and I assume he would remember the other players' motions. Is it like a copycat game, Thumper?
I don't know what Thumper is.
I don't know what Thumper is. We might be telling ourselves here. Okay, what is Thumper? I think you're the youngest of us.
Well, no, it's on the table.
It's from it's a copycat game because all these are in the movie Beer Fest, and that was like you had to put together your squad and you had to figure out who had the best skills for the certain things. Flip cup, Carl Durrell. Ooh, good wide receiver when he was at UCLA. Soft hands will serve him well in this game. And then last pick, your anchorman. The anchorman is in the Das Boot relay, Eddie O, which I imagine is Ed Ogeron. Any drinking game coaches that you would make you adjustments to?
A couple of the first ones. I was going Brett Bielema, the number one draft pick. Like that's for any game. Like, who cares what game it is? You're just talking beer. That Brett Bielema would be the top of the list.
If I'm putting together a team and Flip Cup's part of the event, I don't need a coach. I'm a Flip Cup champion, so I'll take that one.
I'm gonna take me first of all. Let's go. All right, this next one, we're jumping into NFL draft talk. It's going to be a big part of our March and April as we count down to the NFL draft at the end of that month. And also, we'll get a chance to go back with a little review. So, to sort of kick off the NFL draft season here on the Cover 3 podcast, we've got a question from Brojo18. If Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson would have switched teams for the 2020 season, is it possible that Zach would have put up better numbers with the Tigers than Trevor did with them? Zach spent the entire year throwing to white dads, and he was missing arguably his best pass catcher in Matt Bushman. What say you? And for the purposes of our discussion, I'd also like to do the full Freaky Friday and put Zach Wilson on Clemson, Trevor Lawrence on BYU. How much do you think the teams impacted the performance of these two likely first-round NFL draft quarterbacks in 2020.
Zach Wilson is not putting up better numbers at Clemson than Trevor Lawrence did, period.
Yeah.
He could if he didn't get COVID, because, you know, Trevor
Lawrence
missed two games.
True.
So, yeah. I mean, there's that argument. Remember I told you guys, I think I told you guys on here, there's going to be somebody who says the number one quarterback is not Trevor Lawrence. And sure enough, what happened a couple days ago?
It was Chris Sims.
Chris Sims goes out there and does it. And it's interesting because I've seen.
Does he count? Does he work for us?
No, he doesn't work for us. NBC like, Sports with Florio, right? He does Pro Football Talk. You know,
so he's like a name in NFL media.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And he does, he's an NFL guy. So he does more NFL. They do all NFL on their show, but every year he does do a quarterback specific, you know, ranking of quarterbacks.
And he's been good. He's made a couple calls that have ended up looking okay. Right.
Yeah. I think he's made a couple good calls and he's made a couple bad calls. Like, I don't think he's anything specially good or specially bad. Like, I don't think it's one way or another. But I don't know. It's interesting because I saw some people saying like, hey, at least somebody's against the grain. Well, good luck with that. Like, go ahead. If you want to be against the grain, if you were a front office member or a GM or a coach, and you were in charge of selecting quarterbacks for this year's draft, there is zero chance you would put your livelihood on the line by taking a flyer on Zach Wilson over Trevor Lawrence. Like, it's one thing to do it, and it's fun to be the contrarian, and I don't mind that line of thinking all the time. And you could make a case, and you could look at different film, and you could definitely portray this situation. But to me, that's exactly what this is. This is entertainment that Chris Sims is providing us with. And of course, there is a chance that, you know, Zach Wilson gets drafted and he's in a better situation than let's say Urban Meyer is a disaster in the NFL. I'm not saying he will be. Let's say he's overmatched. The players don't like him. There's a revolt and, you know, Darrell Bevell doesn't, you know, maybe there's a conflict between coaches and Trevor Lawrence doesn't work out the first 5 years. Yeah, there's a chance Zach Wilson could be better his first 5 years. There's a chance he could have a better NFL career, but not one person would make that decision based on what we've seen up to this point from both those quarterbacks. And Zach Wilson's good, but there's no way you're taking him over Trevor Lawrence.
You know who else was missing his number one quarterback or number one receiver this year?
Trevor Lawrence.
Trevor Lawrence.
Justin Ross missed the whole year. And then Frank Ladson and Joe Nagata also got hurt. They ended up, who is it?
Cornell Powell and Amari
Cornell
Rogers.
Powell all of a sudden became a stud. But like, you know, it wasn't like Trevor was throwing to dudes who were proven studs. I mean, that team had a whole lot of uncertainty on it as well. And you know, you may be throwing to white dads as the questioner said, but he's also like those guys are being covered by white dads too, or you know, guys who aren't even good enough to play at BYU. I think Zach Wilson's pretty good, but I mean, Trevor Lawrence is the rare dude that we have seen since he was 14 years old, ball out, get hyped up more, come up, meet those expectations. Okay, ball out again, expectations raised, and just continues to meet him. It's like he's just always rising to the occasion. That it's freaky.
Now, you know what's interesting? There's a coach on the Vanderbilt staff who did at one time on the Cover 3 podcast say that when they were coming out of high school, and Bud, you'll probably remember this coming from Barton, that he was higher on Justin Fields as a prospect, and Justin Fields looked like the lock and looked like the guy that stood out that everybody was talking about when they were throwing next to each other with Trevor Lawrence versus Justin Fields. And I was kind of surprised to hear that because I knew they both came out with really massive expectations. They were both, you know, five-star guys, were heavily recruited. But I was surprised to hear Barton say that. Now, you could have late bloomers. You could have guys who develop a little bit more. And maybe Justin Fields had already tapped out and was, you know, already kind of the Justin Fields he is now. Maybe Trevor Lawrence kind of honed in a little bit over the last few years. But I was a little bit surprised to hear that at the time. And he wasn't by any means saying that he would have taken Justin Fields first in an NFL draft. But I thought that was an interesting thought that Barton had here not that long ago.
So I will say this. Justin Fields did not finish ahead of Trevor in the final 24/7 sports rankings. I think he actually moved ahead of him for like a month or so. And that was largely because of what he did that summer, like over the camp circuit in the opening finals, in the Elite 11 finals. The guy was just unreal. And a lot of the thinking was, okay, he's just as athletic as Trevor is. He was a baseball guy, and he's coming over to football. Like, hasn't played nearly as much football as Trevor. I mean, his ascendancy, like his arc was just going, you know, straight up. right? And he did outplay Trevor at the opening finals. Like the guy just didn't miss the throw, and it was you know, big balls and it was touch. And he tested off the charts and had certainly had the look of a guy who's going to be a stud. I think probably is a stud, but I was more of a Trevor guy. Very close, by the way. Like, I mean, just because the track record was okay, this guy has done it and carried his team to states every single year in a good division in Georgia over and over and over again. But like they were both really, really good coming out of high school. Like they would be number one overall players in any other year, pretty much. And they just happened to both be in the same year.
Yeah. I'll say this. If Trevor Lawrence is on BYU, they don't lose to Coastal Carolina.
No,
he doesn't get
they
ragdolled
don't.
Before the half either.
No, they like, get, they're killing everybody. Cause that's like, we've been talking about this for a bit. I don't want to go too far into it, but like I had my first mock draft of the spring go up last week. It's, you know, you read it at cbssports.com or find it at the top of my Twitter page. But like the crazy thing to me with Zach Wilson is I think Zach Wilson, sorry, I think he's a very good player. I think he's very talented, but I think what happens when it comes to draft evaluation, particularly with quarterbacks, is we already know Trevor Lawrence is awesome. So people kind of just back off of that. Justin Fields is the presumed number two. But then everybody starts looking for the next thing because they're tired of watching these two guys. So they're not only looking for the next guy to kind of hype up, but they're also looking for anybody that reminds them in any way of what the hot, cool new thing is in the NFL. And what's the hot, cool new thing? It's Patrick Mahomes. So they find Zach Wilson and they see a guy with arm strength. They see a guy with talent. They see a guy making throws off platform with weird arm angles. And it's like, hey, this guy reminds me of Patrick Mahomes. And then it's like, wow, look at how accurate his throws are. Well, look at how wide open the receivers he's throwing to are at the same time. And it's easy to look a lot more accurate when your target is open by 5 yards than it is when it's in a tight window. So I think Zach Wilson is good. I think we've reached a point where it's crazy that we not only have somebody saying he's better than Trevor Lawrence, I think it's crazy to say he's better than Justin Fields.
Agreed.
I think Justin Fields has everything Zach Wilson has, except he's proven he has a very accurate arm and he's done it against much stiffer competition for years.
So
there might have been the more controversial take was having Kellen Mond over Justin Fields in Chris Sims' top five. Like, that's what I'm saying. Take it as entertainment because that's what it is.
So
if you're running a 5 yard slant offense, maybe Kellen Mond is more valuable than Justin Fields.
But they got
Fields.
What they wanted out of it. Yeah. Because we're talking about it.
Mm-hmm. So,
you know what I mean? Like it's hot takery for the hope that other, you know, other written sites will aggregate it and we'll talk about it, which we did because it's fun off-season content. So good job, Chris Sims.
I'm not going to allege, I'm not going to allege fabrication, but I'm just going to mention a couple sets of measurements here. 6'3", 210 pounds. 6'3", 228 pounds. Sounds like those are probably like two pretty similar body types, right? Because the first one is BYU lying about Zach Wilson. And the second one is Justin Fields maybe underselling how big he actually is. If Zach Wilson is as tall as Justin Fields, well, then you know what? I'm 6'4", right? Like, I mean, there's just no way that those two human beings lined up next to each other are only going to be about 18 pounds apart. Because Zach Wilson, yes, he does have a pretty good frame, but he doesn't have the thickness that Fields does. Fields is absolutely taller. And I think that when we watch those plays of Wilson making the throws off platform, extending the plays with his legs and keeping his eyes down the field, he's not dealing with the kind of closing speed of defensive ends and linebackers and cornerbacks that Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence or any of them did. Like, Trevor Lawrence would never have had that much time when a play breaks down to be able to wait for something to happen. Zach Wilson's very, very talented, but he's not 6'3", or at the very least, he's not as tall as Justin Fields. Mm-hmm. And he is not, he should not be ranked, in my opinion, ahead of Fields or Lawrence.
Yeah. And just, I want to reiterate, and I think the three of you will all agree, none of us think Zach Wilson is bad or right. Is not worthy of being a first round pick. It's just, that's kind of what happens when it comes, when you start analyzing QBs, especially for the NFL draft. It's like, if you don't think the guy's number one, then everybody's saying that you think he sucks. I don't think any of us think he sucks. I think that any of us will understand if he's a top 10 pick. It's just, for my evaluation and for what I see going forward, I think it's somewhat silly to consider him in the same level as Fields and Lawrence.
You know what's crazy, though, and this is, I think, where we can do this whole discussion another time, is they're probably going to be five quarterbacks taken in the first round. Two of them are definitely going to be busts, or what we would call busts, like not starting quarterbacks in 4 to 5 years, and maybe three of them. You know, like, that's the reality of the situation that we're dealing with. So I don't know. That to me is the more fun one, like, which, because I think if I was the guy making that call, I would take the safest pick. Now, that's me by nature. I would take the one that I've seen the most film with, the most success with, but there's always that potential that's there and somebody's going to want to take a swing. And it was Jordan Love last year. The Packers took him, and who knows, he might still work out. He still might be that guy, but we overdraft quarterbacks. Like, in, it's crazy now how many quarterbacks go in the first round, and it's because they don't have to pay them as much money as they used to. And because the value of the position, and teams are like, yep, we'll take them. We'll see if we can develop. If not, 3 years, we'll move on. We'll take another one.
Plus, I think you get the extra year on the rookie deal when you take them in the first round too. Yep. But impromptu mailbag question, since we're speaking now of quarterbacks who might go in the first round. Do we have any reaction to both Jaylen Waddle and Devonta Smith both saying without hesitation that they like Mac Jones as a quarterback more than Tua? Like, do you think that's them saying that just to help Mac before the draft, or do you think there's something to it?
I think Mac Jones is better than Tua as well. Like, I thought Tua, I was worried, and I'm a Dolphins fan, and I was not thrilled that they wasn't like I was mad, but I would have rather taken Justin Herbert. I was kind of hoping that that was the move they were going to make. But then when they took Tua, I'm like, all right, let's root for him. I think Tua got caught up in a lot of, oh, he's the reason this Bama offense looks so great, and look at the difference that he made. When in reality, it was Lane Kiffin, you know, Steve Sarkisian, like, taking over this offense and letting all of those athletes truly perform the way that they were capable of, instead of holding back an offense and saying, let's be a little bit more conservative, let's not take as many risks. And so everyone was like, ooh, there's Tua, like, it's all Tua. And I think what Mac Jones proved is that it wasn't Tua, it was really the system, which does, at the same time, it makes me a little bit nervous about Mac Jones as well. Like, what does he do when he gets around talent that's neutralized, where you don't have that much of an edge? Now, I like him, but I think it's definitely a worthy question of Mac Jones. Is, you know, and I think it's worthy to question any Alabama quarterback from now on, and really since Tua, how much of an advantage is it when you have all day to throw, when you have guys that are wide open, and when they're wide open, they catch it and run for 40 yards. Like, I think, and you have a running back you can hit it off to in case you get in trouble as well. Like, I think those are all valid questions to ask for any Alabama quarterback.
I think that Tua had, like, you know, one extra spot at the table for dinner one night. Maybe they were going to AJ McCarron's sushi restaurant in Tuscaloosa.
Agent.
And
don't forget too the way Tua got to play, and the rumors that were, hey, if he didn't get to play, he was going to leave. Like, Tua came in with a big personality and a big expectation, and he was going to play, and he kind of got his way into that lineup. Remember Mac Jones? Waited his opportunity, you know, kind of earned it the hard way, and I think that might play into some of these opinions as well.
But, Danny, if you talk to guys who were on that team or on that staff, they knew all year that Tua was a lot better than Jalen Hurts was, and they were begging for Tua to play over Hurts. Like, they knew Hurts was holding back that offense because of his throwing, and – like, it took up until, like literally they were about to lose the national championship because that's how limited, you know, Hurts was as a passer at that time. I think he's probably better in the NFL now. So, you know, credit to him. But, like, I think if I was Tua, I'd be pissed too. That if I'm clearly balling out in practice and I'm better than the guy that they keep playing over me, and the reason why they're not making the switch is because we're winning. I mean, they were undefeated that year, but it wasn't because of Hurts. But I agree. Like, I think that Tua did have some growing up to do when he got to Alabama. Just, you know, I think – I forgot who told me
there's
this.
There's a lot to,
like,
it.
He and Najee roomed together.
Tua's dad is a big personality. He had his brother on the – like, there was a
family
lot.
Family had moved to Tuscaloosa.
Family there to Tuscaloosa. Like, there was a lot going on there.
That's common, though. Like, yeah. I don't think people realize that. If you sign a big-time recruit, you're oftentimes – the family is finding a way to move very close to that big-time recruit.
So, Danny, are you trading Tua to Houston for Deshaun?
all day long if I could, if I can get the deal.
What kind of question is that?
I just wanted to, you know.
Yeah, to clarify. Like, I think you would ask almost any Dolphin fan, they would too.
Because I was thinking, like, as a Bears fan, like with the Russell Wilson stuff last week, I was sitting there thinking, is there a single player on my team's roster right now that I wouldn't trade for Deshaun Watson or Russell Wilson? And I could not think of a single one.
So that you would not.
I would not trade. Yes.
I mean, can't. All right. Before we hit the break, Bud, I love the addition of Bud to the podcast. Can he tell me the best material to study for the LSAT?
So my buddy and I, who practices in South Florida now, he does condo law. We took the LSAT class, which South Florida is a pretty good place to do condo law.
Yeah.
We took the LSAT prep class together, and I don't want to disparage him. So they basically taught it to, like, they had a guarantee that, like, you would increase your score, right? I hadn't taken it before, but they were kind of going, like, super slow, I think, so that they wouldn't have to pay out the guarantee. So, like, they were it was more of a class of, like, raising the floor rather than, like, let's really get after this thing. And the teacher was just kind of teaching to the books. So we kind of just quit the class and kept the books and studied together at our own pace. And I think that was much better. Like, we got to a lot more material and kind of did it in our own way than we were going to do with the course. So it worked out really well.
Coming up on the other side, the big bowl games. They are prestigious. They have long histories. So we are going to open up our own personal favorites, head down to memory lane. Our favorite Orange, Sugar, Rose, and Fiesta Bowl next. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features ensure that you can take on any adventure. What kind of features? Well, how about the available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud? Or the standard third row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. How about available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone? We're always trying to think about those great spring and summer getaways, but with a car like the Hyundai Santa Fe, anywhere can be your next adventure. To learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe, go to HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This next question, fun pod as always. Thanks to you all and all the hard work you put in to make Cover 3 the great success that it has become. Question, when you think of the major bowl games, Orange, Sugar, Rose, and Fiesta, which one is the most memorable to you, one from each category? I think bowl games, unfortunately, have been downgraded in the playoff era and would love to hear your favorite games from each of the four.
I've got a Fiesta Bowl that stands up in mind.
Go for it.
Miami shows up in the fatigues. Penn State, with literally no offense, picks him off six times. It's Toretta, right, Danny? That throws six picks?
No, that was Vinny Testaverde.
Testaverde, okay.
I think so, yeah.
I remember watching that, you know, when I was younger, and I mean, six picks, it was very much like one of the first instances I think of, like, national media getting involved in hyping up a real college bowl game like that. Right. And, you know, they refused to eat dinner at the pregame, you know, banquet thing together with Penn State. And then they were really cocky going in, and then Miami has to eat a little bit of crow. Cause it turns out, yeah, Penn State can't score, but they have a lot of future NFL guys on their defense, and they get six picks and end up winning that game. So that's a good one to find on YouTube if you're if you're done watching us on YouTube for the day.
Mine are mostly recent. Go ahead, Tom.
My favorite, I've got a lot of Rose Bowl ones. Obviously, the Rose Bowl's always been my favorite game, but just in recent years, I feel like the back-to-back seasons with the Oklahoma-Georgia playoff semi that went to overtime. And then the year before that, the USC-Penn State 52-49 game was fantastic. There's tons of great Rose Bowls that I love, though. My favorite Orange Bowl might be a bit off the radar, and I know it's not going to be popular on this podcast, but the reason it's my favorite is because I was at, you know, a friend's house for a New Year's Day party kind of deal. And we were getting ready to watch the game. And a friend of mine was a big Florida State fan. And he didn't go to Florida State, wasn't from Florida, just became a big Florida State fan, a kid from suburban Chicago somehow. And they were playing Oklahoma in the BCS championship game. And Oklahoma was a huge underdog. And I was like, I'll take Oklahoma and the points. And it was $100, which at the time for us being college kids was a lot. Oklahoma 13, Florida State 2.
That game sucked.
I mean, this sets off debates still of if you are hired away, should you coach as a coordinator in a bowl game? Because this is the game that Mark Richt had been hired. He stayed on to call the plays. And I mean, look, that was a good Oklahoma defense. And John Blake had done a really nice job recruiting that roster that Bob Stoops took over. But I mean, there was something wrong with that offense that day, right? Like, Danny, I'm not crazy here. That was Oklahoma deserved to win based on how Florida State played, but also FSU kind of beat themselves a little bit that game with 2 points with the Heisman winner.
I went to the game. I was there in person. It was gross. It was pretty bad. And Mark Richt's my guy. I always wonder, like, if I was a coach, like the head coach, my coordinator was leaving, I think me personally, I would say, good luck. Go ahead. Like, you go all in on that. Now, we've seen it work other ways too. We've seen coaches stay on and win national championships and then go, you know, so we've seen it work both ways. That would be my personality. But that one definitely stung a little bit. That one was great. It was just a horrible performance from Florida State. For my bowl, the Rose Bowl, I think, you know, the granddaddy of them all, gets a lot of attention. I'm a little bit partial to the Orange Bowl. Played in three of them, went to it a bunch, even to some regular season games, to Dolphins games. But I do almost prefer the Orange Bowl at the old Orange Bowl, the real Orange Bowl, when it was nasty and dirty, and they had, you know, the urinals were just like the
wall that you pee on,
the wall,
the trough,
just the trough that was there.
And what Wrigley Field still is today, yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you could go out, you could see like the stands literally would be bouncing, you could see it. But there were some unbelievable games historically. Miami, when it won the national championship in 84, after a failed 2-point conversion by Nebraska, there was Coach Bowden's first national championship game, which I was a part of in 93. There was Colorado and Notre Dame when the Rocket was returning kicks. I mean, there was some unbelievable games. For whatever reason, I feel like the Orange Bowl has kind of taken a back seat in recent history, and there's been some good games, but I don't know, that one to me always, because it's local, because I played in it, it's got a special place for me.
So the Fiesta Bowl, Boise State, Oklahoma, mm-hmm. It's sort of, you know, iconic for a lot of different ways also. And, you know, in the BCS era, we've got the weird, like, it's the BCS national championship game, but it also is the bowl game. But Auburn over Oregon was a Fiesta Bowl game. The CAM championship, Michael Dyer, was he down? I'm kind of on the other side of it where I look at those Sugar Bowls and I just, you know, from LSU not being able to cross midfield, you know, there's a lot of LSU winning the national championship in New Orleans just a year ago. But I actually threw Florida State, Virginia Tech on there just because, you know, that Peter Warwick, Michael Vick, you know, like if it was a high scoring game, like even as Vick, like he provided enough of a spark that even though it never looked like Florida State was going to lose, you weren't quite ready to put that game to bed yet. So that was my favorite Sugar Bowl. For the Rose Bowl, you're right, there have been many, but I don't think anybody mentioned Vince Young, Texas USC.
Yeah.
Rose Bowl.
I thought that was like a given. That was like such an obvious one that it's just too
it's got to be mentioned, man. It's got to be mentioned. And like, then
I could do 15 different Rose Bowls. That's the
well. And so for Orange Bowl, I went for one very, very early in my personal. And I'm sorry to be dating anybody on this podcast, but one of my early college football memories is Tommy Frazier, and Nebraska takes down Miami in the Orange Bowl in 1995 or 1994 season, 1995. So that was one that I had on there for the Orange Bowl. But I agree with y'all. It's tough. Like that's where I would like a plus one model. That's where I would be fine if we just went back to the AP voters. Cause then I think each of the bowl games, if you do like the pomp and circumstance around it, then it at least is maintained in some way. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And for my Sugar Bowl picks, there was a 3-year stretch that I really enjoyed just for kind of trollish laughing at people reasons. It was first the 2013 Sugar Bowl, number 22 Louisville beats number 4 Florida 33-23. And we're told that it only happened because Florida didn't want to be there. The next year, number 10, Oklahoma beats number 3, Alabama, 45-31. And again, we're told by SEC fans, it's because Alabama didn't want to be there. The next year, January 1st, 2015, the very first year of the college football playoff, number 4, Ohio State, the team that shouldn't have been in the playoff, beats number 1, Alabama, 42-35. And we weren't able to be told that it wasn't because Alabama didn't want to be there. So watching top 5 SEC teams lose 3 straight Sugar Bowls to much lower ranked teams from the Big 12, the ACC, and the Big 10 in consecutive years, just during the height of the SEC being the best conference in football by a wide margin, was just a nice counterweight for those 3 seasons. So it's like, if you weren't an SEC fan, at least you could go to those games.
Oh, also, can we point out that like Danny was somewhat right back in 2015 or 2014 to be picking it. Like, is the SEC really this good? Like Mississippi State, Ole Miss. Like, I think Saban getting that Bama team with that quarterback play to the playoff at all was one of his best coaching jobs. Like, I don't think the SEC was actually that great that year. Right. It just, it had some, I don't know. Like I agree with you, but I think we've had some Sugar Bowls that really weren't that great kind of in the mid 2000s. And it was for large part because of how the SEC was winning games. It was like all defense or occasionally, you know, blowouts. There were a lot of really good Sugar Bowls in the 90s. I mean, a whole lot, like at Alabama, Miami, where George Teague strips, Teague takes the ball. It's that famous call. I forgot who is it. Not Ronnie Thomas. The guy that he stripped the ball from in the Sugar Bowl for Bama against Miami. But like Florida State, you know, they played 2 out of 3 years. One of those went Florida State's ways. The other one probably should not have been played.
Lamar Thomas.
There we go. Yeah. I mean, there were some really good games there in the 90s. I think it kind of flipped because of the style of play that was happening.
I think the drunkest Sugar Bowl I was ever at was definitely 2002 when LSU beat Illinois 47-34.
That's just, that's 2002, Tom, in New Orleans.
Kirk Kittner.
Yep. Ron Turner. Yep. The soberest I've ever been in New Orleans for a Sugar Bowl was 2012 when Michigan beat Virginia Tech 23-20. But of course, I was there for work.
Right. I thought that was just because you were hanging out with Michigan fans.
Oh, yeah. I travel with Michigan fans everywhere they go.
Yeah. Next question. This is a response from our college football playoff discussion at the beginning of the week. So go and check that out if you didn't get a chance to. This is from Kyle. And we'll listen. Suggestions about the college football playoff have been right up there with conference realignment suggestions and many that we love. And please continue to fill up our Apple reviews with all of them. We will pick them out. It is a continuing conversation. This one stood out because it's a little bit wild. Want to see what y'all think. Hey guys, love the pod. Got switched once Barton and Bud died, RIP, and thoroughly enjoy the commentary. Here's my thought to the playoff solution, and it's crazy, I know. All right, Kyle. Only division winners advance. Get rid of conference champions altogether. No need for at-larges. Win your division. Sure, Non-conference games lose some power, but it keeps the regular season meaningful and makes the selection like a true draw. Names in a bowl would make for some crazy matchups.
All right, I'll be the negative guy and just explain why this wouldn't work. Money. These conferences make an absolute killing on like selling the rights to these conference championship games. Like the reason, you know, the SEC went first, it made a whole bunch of money on its one, and then everybody else, all the other conferences saw that and they're like, we're going to have them too. It's not to determine one true champion, it's to you know, cash one big check. So that's why this won't work. I'll get out of the way now.
I love that line. I might tweet that out right now. It's not to get one true champion, it's to get one big check. I love
yes.
it. And it's true. I've campaigned the other way. Like, let's do away with divisions so that we can get the most competitive conference championship games there that we can, even if it does mean a rematch. Like, so what? Like, it's great if we get rematches. It's great teams that are playing against each other. Plus, I mean, you talk about the chances of a, you know, 8-3 or 8-4 team getting in or a 9-3 team getting in. Like, if you start allowing division champs into a playoff, you're more likely to get that because of a one game upset. And it could be a really a division that's really bad. I mean, you know, you've had the Big Ten West has been down at times. You've had the SEC East be kind of crappy sometimes. You've had, like, I just think I'd rather do away with divisions than try to make it only division winners and not have conference champs.
Championships. Yeah. I feel like getting rid of divisions is smarter than making them even more important than they already are.
I love that Danny's trying to get soccer out of his life, but his let's only bring the conference champions to the table and have a draw is very soccer. That's very, very close. You know, you got your group winners and then we just have a draw and then we see what happens. This next question comes from Valhalla. With FCS playing in the spring, I get to watch their games. Is this something they should keep doing? It gives media outlets a chance to preview the season and draw more attention to the season. I guess preview the upcoming season and draw more attention to the FCS season, and more people get to watch it. How many fall Saturdays do I get to watch Chattanooga versus Wofford? I know it would make the draft process complicated for some players, but overall, would it make more sense?
I was a big proponent of this during the fall season, saying, hey, this is going to be great for the FCS. Probably oversold it somewhat. I mean, how many FCS games have you guys watched? You know, and we're diehard football fans. Zero. Yeah, not many.
Watched like a quarter of the North Dakota State Southern Illinois game, but that was only because I found out Southern Illinois was winning
right on Twitter. Like it starts trending. I did the same thing. It was funny because I was, you know, we're talking about our draft. I did talk to Nick Hill. We had him on the radio show and asked him this very question. And I've talked to Larry Scott, the coach at Howard. You know, so I've talked to a couple of football coaches from the FCS about this. They're intrigued by it. I think what would make the world of difference is if you could get some network, whether it was ESPN or CBS or Fox, and say, all right, you guys really want to do this? Then we'll do it. You know, if you get a TV deal where all of a sudden you don't have to run to ESPN Plus, or you don't have to find some buried deep Fox Sports, Southwestern, you know, whatever channel it is to find the highlight. Like, and I'm not saying you have to put it on CBS, you know, network on, you know, 3:30 prime window, but it's got to be a little bit easier to find. And if you did that, I think it'd be outstanding exposure, but barring that, I don't know if it makes that big a difference. And I was one that was pounding the table for it, saying this could be really good for them. It has to come with TV. You have to get the exposure of those games.
And the way I look at it too is, how many times do we have to see spring football fail before we just kind of accept the fact that, hey, we all love football. It's the most popular sport in this country. It's just nobody wants it year round. Like, there are other things that people do in the spring besides just watch football. There are other sports that people are interested in. A lot of football fans, but most football fans don't only just watch football. So you see these professional leagues start and they fail. If a professional spring league isn't a viable option, I don't know how an FCS football season would work. I think it could be like a niche sport. And I think that, like Danny, you mentioned, if a network came up and said, we'd give you the exposure, and it wouldn't be like on a streaming platform. That's the thing. I think that the FCS, the people that you'd be marketing it to, your customer base, I think that it would be, I think if it does happen, it would be a streaming service, because I just feel like that's the one way it would work for them. It's just, I don't think spring football is going to work. We've got March Madness. We've got the NBA. You've got the NHL. You've got baseball starting. It's like, it's obviously FCS is always still going to be overshadowed by the NFL and the FBS in the fall, but there are just as many other sports that are going to overshadow it in the spring as well.
And if you think about what are the only two sort of second level sports, like we acknowledge that they are not as good, you know, player wise as the A grade sports that are actually successful in this country that people actually watch? It's college basketball. And why? Largely because it's been tradition for 100 years. You have huge built in fan bases based on college affiliations and, you know, regional affiliations. Like, you don't have the tradition of people wanting to watch Notre Dame of the FCS, right? Like, it's just not there. People don't watch FCS. They don't watch AAA baseball. They don't watch the WNBA, right? I mean, some do, but, like, you know, the ratings of those things just aren't high enough. And it's just not that good of a product. I don't think moving to the spring would help it all that much.
I mean, are you moving the other sports at these universities too? I mean, not to be the like ultra wonky guy, but what about the resources within these athletic departments that already might have
fans show up for swimming?
I mean, like, they've like, how are you going to staff this football game? You know, how it is. It's just a lot to ask on these universities. And I think that if, you know, he or she mentioned the draft and the question, but what about like player movement of a guy who's at FCS and wants to be up in Power Five? Like, doesn't being on the same calendar help you out just a little bit more at that stage too? So I would imagine that this does end up being a one season only event. Gentlemen, the time has arrived. Next week, spring gleaning, baby. We are opening up the notebooks. We're breaking down the teams division by division. ACC week next week. ACC boys in the house. Let's go. We'll decide. We'll have one division, one episode for the Atlantic, one episode for the Coastal. Our burning questions, because like spring practice is underway at Clemson, and I think there's maybe like three in total. We're at about three or four of the ACC teams actually have started spring practice. So we've got a few notes and tidbits and, you know, pre-spring press conferences that we can chew on. But in general, we're going to address this as saying, like, what do we want to see answered? What is intriguing to us? Our burning questions, the conversations that interest us about all of these different Power Five teams. Next week, spring gleaning, ACC edition. Make sure you keep your eyes out for it. Make sure you're always subscribed, stream, and follow on Spotify. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow him at Danny Cannell. You can follow him at Tom Fernelli. You can follow him at BudElliott3. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.